Listen to shoot the defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defense. I'm your host, Stel. We're on FNX. And as you can tell by my voice, I'm rather well. I'm quite the opposite, actually. I'm unwell, but you know what? I'm not going to get the violins out. This isn't take the piss out of Jan Day. Of course it is. Speaking of Jan, he's here. How you doing, mate?
I was all right until Rod started bullying me off air. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting show.
What's new?
Yeah, but it's like a bit excessive tonight. Like, listen, I wasn't used to it.
Listen. This is like. Remember the cartoon Garfield?
Yes.
Yeah, Garfield the cat, and then he had the dog Odie. Well, Rod is Garfield and you're Odie, because Garfield always used to beat the living shit out of Odie, but Odie always used to come back. That's you.
Yeah, when we started this show, it used to be like a camera, but we've had to go to off camera because Jan's had a good Christmas and he's carried it on.
I think it's all that comfort eating off the United, just dropping points throughout the past couple of seasons. But yeah, he's all right. And Rodri's here. How are you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks.
Splendid. Did you watch the rugby this weekend?
Yes, I did. It was a very good, enjoyable Friday night.
Ah,
Not so much Saturday, but there you go.
Fair enough. So, I actually don't even follow rugby. What happened? Remind me, please.
Wales beat France in France on Friday night, and England surprisingly beat Ireland Saturday.
Huh. Okay, that's what, the Six Nations?
Scotland beat Italy.
So is it finished now, or...?
The first game. So everyone's got to play each other. So now it's the first game. So basically, it's between Wales and England now.
Oh, okay, fair enough. And what do they win? Do they win a trophy? Do they win an urn or something? I don't know.
they win a trophy, and they win the Six Nations. And if they win it all, they can win the I can't remember what it's called. It's lost me. The Triple Crown or something like that. Something along them lines. I know it's something like that. But
is this the competition where the third place literally wins a wooden spoon?
I think the last one does get a wooden spoon, yeah.
Fair enough. I don't know what are they going to do with it. What do they do with it? They put it in a trophy cabinet, or do they have like a replica made and put it in there? I don't know.
I'm not sure about that one.
The almost won it trophy. How about that? Spurs can have a couple of those, can't they? They almost won the Premier League trophy.
Did
anyone watch the Super Bowl by any chance, or no?
I fell asleep. I did start watching it, but I fell asleep. Defence killed me off.
Do you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. That is the only sport I really struggle watching, NFL. I can't watch it. There's something about it I just can't watch. It's all those flags being thrown and all these different things. I mean, you were complaining earlier, Jan, about, you know, rugby and scrums and all that. I mean, NFL is just as bad.
not my kind of sport, mate.
No. Well, see, at least with rugby, they don't need to wear headgear and that kind of stuff. They're tough, aren't they?
It's watching it though. It's still brutal. It's just brutal watching it.
It's all padding and all that. But anyway, well, I couldn't do it. But anyway. Anyway, right. So let's talk about proper football, shall we? Because that's what we're here for, I guess. And we'll start with the game of the weekend, which took place at the Empty Had, where City tore Arsenal apart with a 3-1 win. Sergio Aguero's hat trick, his 14th for the club, reduced the gap at the top to 2 points, while Arsenal slipped down to 6th. In the table, yes, 6th. Jan, Aguero scored within the first minute for the second game in a row. This time, however, City didn't capitulate like they did at St. James's Park. Truth be told, they won this in second gear, didn't they?
They did, especially in the second half still. I thought first half when City scored off, you know, so early in the game, I thought Arsenal were in big trouble. And for the first maybe 10, 15 minutes, it looked that way. But credit to Arsenal, they got an equaliser. They look quite threatening in the first half, to be fair. They had some kind of promising moments and they kept the ball quite well, but second half, City came out, and I think that goal before half-time for City psychologically had the big effect on Arsenal. And Arsenal were non-existent in the second half, but I thought City were brilliant. You know, they controlled the game. They had loads of chances in the second half. The scoreline could have been a lot more than 3-1. And, they made it, easier than what possibly, could have been a little bit different.
Yeah. And Rod, I was really surprised at how wasteful City were in front of goal. What did you make of them going forward yesterday?
Yeah, they were sloppy in front of the goal. But you always think with City, especially at home, they've got that extra gear to go to, and they show, and they just up to the gear, and they got the goal just before half time, and then it was never in doubt for me. You know, they look strong, and yeah, well, like I say, it's they've always got that extra gear, especially at home.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is, I noticed they did really well to keep Lacazette and Aubameyang quiet. I think Kyle Walker slotted in at centre-back with Fernandinho and Otamendi, so when Arsenal broke forward, it kind of made it a bit more easier for them to kind of stifle them, so to speak. Kyle Walker is very quick, and obviously Fernandinho reads the game very well. How much of an impact do you think that tactical switch made?
Yeah, obviously the pace of Kyle Walker and the experience and the know-how of Fernandinho has obviously stifled them, and obviously that's their danger, and if you stifle them, they haven't got Arsenal, so it was a very good tactical step. It paid off because in the end it was an easy 3-1 win, and Arsenal looking in the doldrums.
Mm. And did you think Arsenal would actually even get anything out of the game when they pulled level?
No, I didn't. I think like I say before, in previously that when City they've got that extra gear, they've got extra quality, and we've seen against United. They're very vulnerable at the back, even though we're Koscielny back. There's still that weakness there. They still need that authority figure, and until they get that, they're going to lose some goals because, it's even though they've had a good start. It's leveling out now, and you can see really that the weakness and where he needs to improve.
And what about you, Jan? What do you think Arsenal need to improve?
Probably a whole back five, to be fair. Especially with Bellerin being out, for maybe 9 months to a year. I think the right back position for them, Lichtstein, I think his legs are gone. I don't think their left backs are, I know they've got Kolasinac and Monreal, but I'm not a massive fan. And in the heart of the defence as well, Koscielny, I think, is past it. Mustafi doesn't breed any confidence. Holding possibly is one for the future, but I don't think he's great. And even, I know Cech's retired, but I don't even think Leno's any great. So I think definitely a back five. And they've got a massive problem with Ozil as well. That, if you're going to have a player like that, you need to play him or either get him on side. And, with Ramsey going as well, Mkhitaryan hasn't been firing. They seriously lack creativity going forward.
Aguero was absolutely fantastic. I tweeted earlier, I don't think there's a better striker in the world at the moment. And Kevin De Bruyne actually looks like he's the Kevin De Bruyne of old. I know slowly he's getting back into things, but he was getting into space, his movement was good, his passing was fantastic, and he was really, really giving Torreira a hassle yesterday. Do you think he'll come good or even become a better player come the end of the season?
Oh yeah, of course, mate. The guys had injuries, nearly all season. So the more games he's going to play, the more match fit's going to be, the more sharp he's going to get, and his quality is going to be there to see it. I mean, I think he could be the difference, City winning the league title. I really do. The fact that he's been out for so long this season, he's going to be fresher than most players, and he's got. I mean, the guy's absolutely quality still. He can play with both feet. He can play behind the striker, he can play in midfield, he can even play, like a off winger, so to speak, and he creates, he scores, he can defend, he's got everything in my book. So, I think it's only good omens for City, him being fit for the rest of the season.
Mm. All right, well, look, I'm going to ask you both this question because I know it's very, very easy to point the finger at Unai Emery when results don't go Arsenal's way, but I think he's actually done a good job given the circumstances, lads. I mean, and by that I mean, you know, he's had a low transfer budget, squad containing a mixture of average players, big egos, fragile mentalities and a few individuals who give their all. Do you agree or disagree that Emery has done well so far? Rod, what do you reckon?
Well, looking at it, he's done well with what he's got, you know. Well, the problem he's had, yes, he got beaten his first game, but after that, you know, he went on a great run. And then you know what the Arsenal fans like, they've got ahead of themselves, they've all got giddy, and now it's the reality's kicked in. That, you know, the squad's not as strong as they think it is, and, you know, they need real investment and players and decent players, not players like Liechtenstein that are over the hill. They need players that are not players like Ozil that don't want to fight for him. You know, the letting go Ramsey, in my opinion, is still a good player for them and could do a job for him, a good job. But, you know, obviously they've not offered him what he wanted, so he's on his way. So, yeah, they've got a real building. You know, Solskjaer's come in and done a job with United, but you know, he hadn't had to do what Emery had to do. The Arsenal haven't got the quality United have. Even though United's defence is still poor, you know, I still think they've got better quality in Arsenal, and Emery's got a tough job, and for me, he's done an okay job, but you know, he's still got a long way to go and a lot of work to do.
Rod, you mentioned Liechtensteiner just now. Do you remember when we signed Laurent Blanc and a lot of people were saying, you know, it's a silly signing and whatnot, but I've said it before, Rio Ferdinand and all the other younger players at the time must have learned a lot from him. Do you think Liechtenstein has got that sort of impact at Arsenal, or is he just there to make up the numbers or for cover? Is he offering anything in the background, you reckon?
Well, I think when you say Laurent Blanc, he was around great players, so it kind of worked. And when you're winning games and winning leagues, then it can rub off on the younger players. But when you're coming in and you're getting turned over and you get to make like a little bit of a fool, then how can players learn off that? It may be inside the change room or on the training ground, but you know what we're seeing in games, he's finding it difficult. And you know, Laurent Blanc had a bit of class about him, but he had quality players around him, and you know, unfortunately Liechtenstein hasn't got that.
Jan, what do you make of Emery's tenure so far? I don't think he's done too bad, again, given the circumstances, given what he's got to play with.
I agree, still. Listen, it was always going to be a difficult job, regardless of, you know, with Wenger leaving as well. He did leave a legacy at Arsenal. I know the Arsenal fans wanted him out at the end, but, you know, the problem I've got with Emery as such is, for me, it's the Mesut Ozil situation. And it's not the fact that, listen, the manager's the manager, and he's going to pick his players and the one that he likes, and he feels that Ozil doesn't give 100%, which, at times, I'm probably going to agree with him. But the problem you're going to have with Ozil not playing, if you're not going to supply the front two with service, how are they going to score goals? For me, yesterday, you can't keep playing Torreira and Guendouzi in the centre of midfield and then expect to create abundance of chances with a Iwobi wide left. It's not going to happen. So if you're winning games without Ozil in the team, the fans will forgive you because, you know, you're the manager, you're making the decisions. But when things start going wrong, and I think the Arsenal fans have started to point out that, you know, where is Ozil? You know, we're paying him 350k a week, wherever, you know, where is he in the games? He's not even coming off the bench. You know, yesterday at 2-1, 3-1, all right, he's not going to start a game. But surely with his creativity, you'd like to think that he'll come on and have an influence on the game. Nothing. It doesn't bring him on. So for me, that situation needs to change. Also, I think the Arsenal fans probably, you know, it shows the value of Wenger, I think, as well. Because with Wenger, he won them trophies still. Regardless of, you know, not winning the league. They won the FA Cup here and there. They always had good runs in the Cup. Emery's been out of both competitions, both the League Cup and the FA Cup. So if you're going to compare Emery to Wenger over the years, for me, it's kind of the same old Arsenal, but with Wenger winning the odd FA Cup here and then. I mean, that's the way I see it. I haven't seen much of a change. I don't think they play good football, Arsenal. They press a lot and they try to play football from the back, which I don't personally think they have the footballers to do that from the back. So, There is a lot of work to be done at Arsenal. A lot of work.
So what, is he underachieving?
He hasn't had the abundance of money the other clubs have had. You know, let's put it that way. I mean, he's found a gem in Guendouzi and Torreira, which he's kind of addressed the centre midfield position. Is he underachieving? I think it's very early to judge him. You know, he's only been there, what, 6 to 9 months. I think that, like I said, the first season was always going to be difficult. We've seen other managers over the years. You know, David Moyes went to United and he did it last, you know, he did it last a year. So he's coming with his own methods and, you know, he's seen, the players seem to have taken to his methods. I just think he needs a lot more quality in there for his ideas to be kind of, you know, addressed at Arsenal.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so Chelsea's players probably thought that beating Huddersfield 5-0 would be like the neuralizer used in Men in Black and that fans would forget the 4-0 pasting at Bournemouth. If the trouncing of Huddersfield had some sort of long-term memory loss powers, then we'd forget all the big games Gonzalo Higuain has bottled and think he's one of the best strikers in the world right now, because in all fairness, both his goals were top quality. Now, speaking of top quality, Marcus Rashford's sublime finish from a fantastic Pogba through ball was enough to give United all 3 points at Filbert Street, or the King Power Stadium, where it's called now. United's win opened up a 10-point gap between themselves and 7th-place Wolves, who pummeled Everton in their own backyard. Jan, Sarri is another manager who has a squad of ageing players, and being brutally honest here, a boatload of mercenaries. Huddersfield at home is a game you'd expect Chelsea to win, but will this do much for their confidence?
It should do so. I mean, and you know, we'll always bring confidence, and especially with Higuain getting off the mark, you know, surely, you know, that's good for the team. I mean, I think there's a lot of problems at Chelsea. I think on the pitch is documented, but I certainly think off the pitch as well. Abramovich is not investing in the team as much as he used to, and you know, you can see it on the pitch as well. Like you said, they're an aging team. There's a lot of uncertainty on a lot of players with your Hazards and your Willians. And these are the key players. So he's another one that's got a lot of work to do. But again, he needs the funds to bring his kind of players that he needs. And for me, he hasn't been backed as thorough as he should have been.
Fair enough. Rod, is Higuain the man to fire Chelsea to top four spot?
Possibly, you know, I'm just a bit of a mate today watching him, and well, whenever he played, and he's, you know, he's got great movement, and you know, he's been a top player, a top goal scorer wherever he's been. But just, you know, for me, the jury's still out. Will he do it against the top clubs? Will he get him into that top spot? It's 50-50 at the minute, but going off what I've seen on the weekend with his movement and stuff, and you know, his, even though his second goal was a deflection, he had great movement, you can see. And if he does that against the top sides, and if he's assisted by his teammates and given the right opportunities, I'm sure he'll do well. But, you know, he's got to be helped out by his teammates. I'm sure if he's given the chances, like Morata's been getting, I'm sure, you know, he'll put them away. But for me, there's still the jury's out. But, you know, you'd expect him to be, like you say, beat Huddersfield, because, you know, they're struggling at the minute, and Chelsea are at home. They've had a bad result in the week, so they've been coming out firing. And, yeah, like I say, the jury's still out, but, you know, he's a top player.
Yeah, I like that first goal better than the second one. I think the fact that he's given the ball to, I think it was Kante, and the moment the ball's gone to Kante, he's pointed in the direction where he wants the ball, and the central defender just didn't know who to pick up, really. And the finish was fantastic. But the second one, big deflection. But hey, it counts.
Yeah. They all count. And, you know, his first one was a great finish. And like you say, his second one looked well as well, but it was a slight deflection.
Absolutely. Well, Jan, you probably remember this, but we really laid into Chelsea after the midweek loss. As we were recording the review, Sarri was actually talking to his players in the dressing room, a meeting that lasted around an hour. This is about the third inquest in his short reign as Chelsea manager. Is this a cause for concern?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if that's the third time he's done that this season, I mean, the more the problem I have with Sarri is he's, how can I say this? He's going public with it, isn't he? And he's coming out and he keeps saying, you know, I can't motivate these players, or, you know, he's kind of feeding them to the lions, really, isn't he? I think he's maybe implicated that he's not the problem, that the players are.
Okay, now, if that's the case, let me just stop you there. If that's the case, why isn't he getting any shit from the media? Well, because Jose Mourinho did it, but no one said anything.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, mate.
Well, everyone slayed Mourinho for it, but no one said anything about Sarri.
I think the Chelsea fans are starting to turn on Sarri a little bit as well. I do agree with you. I think, yeah, but as you know, like, you know, certain managers, I mean, I'm not going to divert away from the question, but, you know, Nuno Espirito celebrates with his players in the 93rd minute. He gets a fine or banned or whatever, and Klopp runs onto the pitch after a derby and nothing happens to him. So
I think he got fined, you know, to be fair.
Who, Klopp?
Yeah, I think so.
Klopp never got fined.
I'm sure he did.
No, he never got fined.
Oh, whatever.
So, but that's what I'm saying, you know, Espirito does it, he's wrong. Klopp does it, it's passion. You know, so it depends how you interpret it. But I think Sarri maybe is by what he's doing, maybe he's trying to make a point to the board, as in, I can't work with these players, I need my own players. Maybe it's a message. But listen, as we all know, we're not stupid. You know, you get the manager's job at Chelsea, you know you're going to get a good payoff. You know, you're not guaranteed to last. You're going to get sacked at some point. So, you know, I guess Sarri just got to make the best of the 2-3 years possibly he might have to.
Rod, how long do you think he's got there, to be fair? Jan said 2-3 years. I don't even think he's got that.
No, I don't think he's going to last there either, by the way he's going and the way that they love to pull the trigger there at Chelsea. They're not known for backing the managers, so yeah, you know, I'd be surprised if he lasts the end of next year, to be honest.
Well, how many players have they signed since he's been there? They signed Jorginho, and they brought any guy in on loan. Pulisic, he didn't even know about. So that just says it all, really. So I can't really think of anyone else that they've signed under his tenure. So it's telling me that they either don't trust him, or they don't want to spend any money.
They can't not trust him still. They just brought him in.
Well,
yeah, I think it might be something to do with the owner not being allowed in the country. No, he might have thrown his toys at the pram and think, I'm not spending any big money if they're going to be doing this.
Or maybe they want to clear the wage bill because they've got a lot of players that are in their 30s now. You've got Pedro, you've got Willian, Fabregas obviously gone. And I think they're in a situation where they need to sell before they go. Oh, kind of like Arsenal, really.
They've got a top player there in Hudson.
Hudson-Odoi, yeah.
So yeah, he's, you know, Chelsea don't seem to, for some reason, they've had a great youth team and they've got some good youth players and they never seem to, you know, Loftus-Cheek, and they don't seem to play him. So, you know, that's what happens when you bring foreign managers, I suppose. They seem to shy away from the English players.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with not being in the Champions League, because the same situation with Arsenal, in the sense that they're not bringing in that extra revenue from the TV money, all that kind of stuff, and they obviously can't rely on their chairman or the owner to throw money in, because he can pump as much money into the club but they can't use it because under the FFP and all these other rules, these regulations. So it just shows how important getting into the Champions League is for these clubs to improve. It's scary, but you mentioned Chelsea got a lot of young players that, you know, they're not using and they're selling on. I think Man City have actually made over £160 million selling youngsters to clubs over the past few years. It's crazy. There's a mad stat or something. I can't remember where I read it or where I saw it. But they were saying that, you know, City have recouped a lot of money on selling youngsters, players that have hardly even played.
But Chelsea don't even seem to do that. They just seem to loan them out.
Yeah, true. True. They've sold quite a few as well, but yeah.
Is Pierre Zon still a Chelsea player?
I think so.
And you've been loaned out like 7 or 8 times in his career so far.
He's just one of these people that just won't go away. He's got like a 15-year contract or something.
Yeah. Crazy.
Absolutely crazy, yeah, that's right. Yes, so, Rod, United, big win. Big win for United, another superb defensive display from Bayer Lindelof. That being said, United were actually quite sloppy on the ball. It was a good result overall, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good result. Like I was saying before we come on air, you know, for me, Leicester's a it's a banana skin because, you know, they're hot and cold, it can be poor, but you know, on the day they can cause an upset. So, you know, even though United were on top form and they weren't at the best, you know, a 1-0 result is a good result, especially from there, because like I say, it's banana skin and it just keeps the run going. Clean sheet, 1-0, next game.
What is it about Leicester, though? Because they've always seemed to give us problems at their ground, even back in the day at Filbert Street.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. It's just that they're a good counter-attacking team, and you know, Vardy's dangerous, and they've always been a good counter-attacking team, and with Vardy, especially with Vardy, they're always dangerous, and you know, now we've had that with Maddison, and they've got a solid back with Maguire. Yeah, so it's a good result because it is a banana skin there, and you know, some big teams have got so not gone away from there with anything. So to get 3 points, carry on the run, get a clean sheet for David De Gea, and move on to the next game.
That's right, and Jan, Leicester pressed really, really well, kept United's chances to a minimum, but that's about it. They were toothless going forward, and quite fortunate to finish the game with 11 men, as Mendy somehow got away with a couple of fouls, which probably would have seen a yellow card. Let's be honest, Leicester aren't very good, are they?
No, they're not. I think Claude Puel is having a torrid time there. I think the fans don't like him. You know, I know this, you know, it's a really bad thing to say, but I only think he's still in the job because of the incidents that happened with Leicester and their chairman, you know, earlier on in the season. I think if those events didn't happen, you know, the manager would have been gone. Strange decision yesterday to take Maddison off. I thought Maddison was having a really good game for Leicester. He took him off, and you know the fans didn't like it. But Leicester huffed and puffed yesterday without you know really creating a lot. I think United had chances earlier on to put the game to bed. They didn't, and at 1-0 anything can happen. So it wasn't the best of games, but you know, I think overall United just about edged it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rod, it was a straightforward win for Wolves, wasn't it? It's almost as if they didn't even break a sweat.
Say again, so you broke up then.
Wolves, it's almost as if they didn't break a sweat against Everton.
Yeah, well, I really did fancy Wolves there because, you know, Everton are the same as Leicester, really. They're hot and cold, and you know, Wolves, I really like Wolves. They're a good team, they're a good outfit, they're dangerous, especially away from home, and they proved that by getting 3 goals and really coming away with an easy win. And you know, Everton's problems just mount, really, where they shouldn't be getting beat at home with a team like Wolves, even though how well Wolves are playing, you know, you expect Everton to expect a home win there, and you know, they continue to struggle.
Yeah,
which is a worry for the fans and the manager.
Yeah, I think the similarity between Everton and Wolves, what I can say is that they're both a couple of central defenders, or good central defenders, away from being pretty decent. I mean, Wolves are a very good side, don't get me wrong, and I think if they brought in a couple of quality central defenders to shore them up a bit more, then they could be serious for a Europa League spot. The same could be said about Everton, because defensively, they've been shambolic. We spoke about it last week, the Millwall game, and the other day, Keane and Zouma, they just don't seem to have any chemistry there. It's almost as if they're literally speaking different languages.
Yeah, they're really struggling. You know, I disagree with the Everton. I just think Everton need, yeah, they do need two centre-halves, but they're desperate for a goal scorer. You know, they're struggling. They're really struggling for a goal scorer. They need a 20 or 25 a goal. Now, I know they're hard to come by, but you know, they had him a few years ago with Lukaku. If they could get someone of that ilk, or even like a 15, 20 goals, then it solves a lot of problems. But yeah, they do need two centre-halves. They have been shambolic at the back.
Yeah, that's right. And speaking of Everton, I saw an interesting tweet from @Shaw_80, who asked, genuine question, did Allardyce have us better organised and better shaped defensively than Silva? What has Silva done to improve the attacking play, and has the defending got worse? Surely, when you change your manager, you try and improve on what's gone on before, a la Martinez and Ronald Koeman's first season. Now, I can see where he's coming from, because they spent over £100 million. What's going on? I mean, under the last two managers, Everton finished 7th and 8th. And I said, Silva spent close to £100 mil. So, can you see why fans are unhappy with his tenure so far?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Of course. You know, the Everton fans are very demanding up there. You know, they demand a certain kind of style or a brand of football that, you know, wants the fans excited. And, you know, Marcus Silva was supposed to be this man that was going to come in and change all that. They were so anti-Allardyce and, you know, his pragmatic ways, defensive styles, etc. And they wanted somebody to come in to excite them. And at the start of the season, it looked like possibly that can happen. But they've faded miserably. And, you know, I think I saw a stat. Haven't they conceded like 16 or 17 goals from set pieces or something silly like that? I mean, that's worse than Sunday League football, to be honest. I mean, for a club that size, with the amount of kind of height and experience they've got at the back to concede. So, I mean, it's not only the defence, it's a collective thing. But, you know, going back to what you said about Keane and Zuma, I mean, you know, some sort of organisation, you know, even Pickford as such, where maybe they shouldn't defend so deep and maybe push, you know, 5 yards further up.
I think, sorry to interrupt you, I think, I think that tells you how much they try and target Pickford. So these balls are coming in. He's not the biggest of keepers. He doesn't come for crosses, and you know, that's why they're probably targeting him. And you know, like Jan says, 15, 16 goals from the set pieces. That is Sunday League football.
But that's what I mean, Rod. You know, if that is the case, which I agree, then surely as the goalkeeper, when you're a bit vulnerable, you push your defence 5 yards further up, so you've got a lot more time to maybe come and collect or see what's going on there. If you're too deep and you're not going to come out and get it, you invite the pressure, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. You've obviously got a question. Is you know his ability to organise his back four if they're coming on top of him and making it difficult for him to come through bodies. If you know, like you say, if you defend a high line, it gives you more space and more time to manoeuvre and come for the ball. But you know, the jury's still out on him. But yeah, they've got a real problem at the minute, Everton, because they're defending is shambolic and they're not scoring at the other end.
The thing is, Mashiri, the owner, he's come under a lot of criticism from Everton fans on Twitter. You know, a lot of them are saying that, you know, he's made three really bad appointments in Silva, Koeman and Martinez. One person even suggested he's gone for like the Hollywood manager style, so to speak, you know, getting in the name as opposed to having someone with substance, i.e. Sam Allardyce. So what do you do with a squad like Everton's? Because they're half decent, let's be fair. You know, they've got a lot of good players, but I still think, much as a lot of other Premier League teams, they've got a lot of deadwood as well. So, obviously, they have to get rid of these players before they can bring in other ones. But we've seen in the past that they spent hundreds of millions of pounds on players and they haven't delivered. So, who's to blame here? Is it a collective thing, or is it the fact that they're not giving managers enough time? Because, as I said, three managers in the past 5 years? It's crazy.
Yeah, I think they need to give managers a lot longer. You know, what's he been there? 4 or 5 months, so it's still very, very early, you know. And wherever he's been, he's really hit the ground running. So, and to come to Everton, he had a good start, but you know, he's faltered at late, and he's just going from bad to worse. To get beat 3-1 at Wolves, it was a poor showing, and you know, you would think that they would back him because you know the effort they've gone to bring him in. And, you know, to sack Sam Allardyce and to think that he's doing a better job than him and to bring in him, he's their man. So you'd think they'd back him and not push the trigger fingers too soon. But, you know, you never know in football, do you?
So, in your opinion, what do you think Everton's long-term plan is then?
Well, Everton's long-term plan is obviously to get in the top six. But, you know, that's very, very, very difficult because they're going to have to spend 100 million every season, and you know, have they got the money to do that? I don't know. And still, even if they do that, it's not a guarantee because you know you've got some top clubs up there, and you've got some big hitters who spend a lot of money as well. So you know, they've brought their man in; they should back him. And you know, if they're going to back him, they've got to give him more money. They can't be swapping and changing managers because you just end up losing money that way, because you bring people in for 50-60 million and some manager doesn't want him, you know, and you end up selling him and losing money and paying wages that you don't need to pay. So you know, you back your manager, you give him at least 2 or 3 years, they're not going to get relegated, they're still going to earn a packet from the TV deals, wherever they come, if they come mid-table or you know, wherever they come, they've just got to back him and give him at least 2 years and assess it from then. And then, you know, if they're in the same situation, they obviously look to change it.
Yeah. Well, I've just seen a tweet from @_Cambo, and he said, Everton have £67 million in bank debt now, and they are £120 million in debt to Mashiri, who's the owner. They also used a £60 million overdraft facility from a Chinese bank to buy players, not Mashiri's money. The stadium will be funded by loans and loans and more loans, if they can find them, not Mashiri. He's a fraud. So it seems to be a general consensus that the owner is the problem, and not for the first time, Jan, have we seen managers or heard of, of owners being the reasons why clubs aren't doing too well. If you're Mashiri now, looking at the squad, are you thinking, well, we're going to stay up and we're going to be safe, so we're guaranteed money from, you know, the prize money, so to speak, for staying in the Premier League. Is he looking to sell, do you think, eventually?
Possibly still. I mean, you know, Everton is a club that, you know, investors would want to kind of, you know, invest and buy the club. So I think if a good offer came in, yeah, of course. I think, to be honest, I think the Everton players have underachieved, if I'm honest. I think they've signed some really kind of decent players. You know, Andre Gomez coming from Barcelona, Lucas Digne from Barcelona, Yerry Mina from Barcelona. All right, they didn't cut it at Barcelona, but they're good players. So for them to be there, you know, in the first place, you know, Barcelona must have seen something in them. So, you know, Andre Gomez has been good, but the other two, well, Lucas Digne actually has been good, but Yerry Mina has been really poor. I think because defensively they're so poor still, it's reflecting, you know, on the whole team. And also, I agree with Rod, you know, not having a striker, you know, who's going to get you 15, 20 goals, you know, that's massive as well. You know, they play Richarlison there, which he's really like a, you know, a number 11 or a winger, so to speak. So, you know, they bought Cosson, that hasn't really worked. So, you know, they need investment up front for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Cardiff's win over Bournemouth made the race to avoid the drop even more interesting, as the gap between them and 17th place Burnley is down to 2 points. Now, Rod, with Benteke and Maya misfiring, Palace desperately needed a striker. So in comes Batshuayi on loan, and he's made an instant impact against Fulham with an assist. Now, signing him has really given the club a lift in the second, some pressure off Townsend and Zaha, hasn't it?
Yeah, and that's what Everton need, a goal scorer. All right, Batshuayi might not get you 15, 20 goals, but you know he's going to give players a lift. He's going to get players a lift around him, and who knows, he might get you that 15 goals. He's hit the ground running, and when strikers hit the ground running and they're full of confidence, you know, anything can happen. So, yeah, I like Palace as well. They've got good players. Zaha, I like Andrew Townsend a lot as well. He can go either way. They seem to be sound defensively as well, and it's a difficult place to go there. So yeah, he's definitely brightened things up there, and they've started off with a good 3 points on Saturday.
What do you not think of Milojevic, the centre midfield player?
Yeah, he's steady, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. I like him.
Well, he seems to have a calming influence. Yeah. And I think they really miss him when he's not there. You know, he's a very experienced player. He's played in the Champions League, obviously World Cups as well. He's not the captain of Serbia, is he? He's the captain of Serbia?
No, Kolarov is.
Kolarov is. But, you know, he's got that experience there in the middle of the park. And again, he's a calming influence. And he scores important goals, albeit penalties. But, you know, if it's a last minute, okay, not against Man City, obviously, but you could have wanted him to take your penalty. So, yeah, I think he's a good player. But, Rod, tell me about Batshuayi, though, because, you know, we've seen great teams in the past. I'm going to use United as an example, like back in the early 90s when you had your Parkers, your Pallisters, Bruces, what kind of stuff. There's a big camaraderie in the dressing room. Nowadays, you've got social media and a lot of players are using it quite frequently, like your Lingards and your Poppers and whatnot. Batshuayi, I've always called, you know, a social media cheerleader. Do you think a character like him can bolster Crystal Palace? I'm not just talking on the pitch, but off it as well.
Yes, it can go down well if you're winning and help if you're winning. That's fine, but you know, if you're losing and you're getting bad results, it's not very good to be active on social media and be laughing and joking. So, you know, it's the times, isn't it? This is what people do now. It didn't happen in them days you were talking about, and that this seems to be the norm now. So, like I say, as long as it doesn't affect on the field, which I'm sure it won't, these are professionals, and as long as they're winning, and I'm sure, you know, these I'm sure these people are schooled anyway by these clubs of what they can and can't write and what they can and can't tweet anyway.
That's right. And joining us is Mark Briggs. How you doing, Mark?
What's happening, guys? How are you?
We're good, mate. We're good. I was about to ask, are you recovering from watching the Super Bowl? Because I know out there in America, everyone seems to be hype about it.
Oh, mate, yeah. I'm not a football fan. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's good to hear.
American football fan, anyway.
Superb. Well, look, we'll just talk about Michy Batshuayi. He's joined Crystal Palace. He's had an instant impact. Do you think he'll be the man to kind of keep that? Because I know they're in a good position at the moment, but in terms of getting goals, they've been struggling. You know, Zaha Townsend has kind of been dragging them through the mire, so to speak. But with Benteke kind of out of form and Maya not really getting the goals, is Batshuayi the right signing?
He could be. He started off well, I think. I think, to be fair, he's not really lit the place up wherever he's been. So hopefully he can do well at Crystal Palace and get some goals. Because he seems to be, like you say, very vocal on social media, but not doing so much actually on the field.
Absolutely. Well, Jan, we've talked about Fulham's shambolic defending on numerous occasions, mate. Now it's Jean-Michel Seri's turn to come under some criticism. He was atrocious at the weekend. He hasn't lived up to the social media hype, has he?
No, not at all, mate. I know a lot of the big clubs were looking at him in the summer and, you know, all of them kind of declined, and then Fulham came in and bought him. He's been really poor, but to be fair, though, still, he's not the only one. Apart from Mitrovic, not a lot of the Fulham players have turned up this season, have they, to be fair?
You know, I think the goalkeeper's been all right.
Yeah, he's been all right, Sergio Rico, but, you know, I know they've conceded a lot of goals and, you know, obviously they're not all his fault, but defensively they've been poor. In midfield they've been poor. Apart from Mitrovic, like I said, you know, Sessegnon, there was a lot of, you know, hype about Sessegnon. He's not really done anything. Kearney's been disappointed. They bought Schürrle, who's supposed to be, a German World Cup winner and a German international who's won leagues at Chelsea, anonymous. And, you know, if these are the players that, you know, if you're going to get yourself out of trouble and they're not performing week in, week out, then you're going to be in the position that you're in. But yeah, going back to your original statement about Seri, he's not been great, but, if Fulham stay up, is his first season, and, you know, you never know. Next year, he might be better, but to be honest, I don't see Fulham staying up anyway.
Mark, I know this is a rhetorical question, but what do Fulham have to do to really get themselves in a position where they can get out of the bottom three? Because we've said it at the beginning of the season. In fact, I think it was about the 7th or 8th game in, we were saying that they've chopped and changed their back four. I know this was under Jokanović, but under Ranieri, it seems to be the same thing. I can't remember the last time they had the same back four or the same defence there. So is defence the first port of call, so to speak, or do they just simply need to get more goals? I know it's an obvious question, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think as a coach, you're looking for people to take their opportunities all the time, aren't they? Kind of make your decision an easy one by their performances. And I think it's two coaches now that are chopping and changing, because performances are up and down, not really, there's no consistency there. And they're still looking for the strongest lineup, and they've got to stop conceding goals. Now, how they do that is down to Claudio Ranieri. But I think there's nobody that's really like taking any game by the scruff of the neck and making their name first on the team sheet, so to speak.
Yeah, this isn't the Valencia Ranieri or Leicester first season Ranieri. This is the Greece Ranieri, isn't he? I mean, let's be honest. And I said this before, and this isn't a knock on the guy. He's not used to relegation dogfights. He's used to chasing Champions Leagues. He's used to chasing league titles. This is a completely different kettle of fish, and I think he's out of his comfort zone at the moment, and really out of his depth.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that for sure.
There you go. Well, Mark, talk to me about Almiron, because is he the creative spark they need? And if so, how old do you think he will do with Rondon up front?
I think he'll do all right with him. He's got somebody to play off, you know. I think over here he's had Martinez, who works extremely hard alongside him, so they kind of complement one another. It'll be interesting because he's not that type of, with Rondon, he's not the type that's going to be, you know, chasing round, closing people down, which is what he was used to with Martinez, and they work well together. But I think he'll definitely be a bonus for Newcastle with his ability and his work rate. I think he'll do well in the Premier League.
Absolutely. Rod, talk to me about Ashley Barnes, because he scored the penalty in injury time. Burnley savaged the point against Southampton. That's a big point, isn't it?
It's a big point, you know. Especially when it's late on like that, you know. Against Southampton, it was, you know, they've got a great point against United, and they've followed that on against Southampton, because it's getting, you know, it's getting. I think Huddersfield and Fulham are down, but you know, with Cardiff winning, and if they continue to get a few points, I still think it'll go to the wire. So every point counts now, and you know, like you say, it was a great point.
Well, that game was the traditional six-pointer, wasn't it? And when Southampton went ahead, I thought, ah, here we go. This is going to be very, very tricky for Burnley to get back into it. But you know what? They showed spirit. They showed some fight. And they showed the Kabaddi football that got them the point, to be fair. And, you know, I've always been a big critic of Sean Dyche's. But to be fair, you know, he's got some really good results recently.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, like we say, he's a good manager. After the debacle of Europe and you know, their squad can't cope with that kind of games Thursday, Sunday. They haven't got the squad for it, so it's probably a good thing that they're out. They've probably got over it now. And you can see the results starting to come back. They should have won against United. And they've got a good performance against Southampton, and they continue to get good results. And like I say, they're going to need it because it's really tight down there now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, in other news, Bayern Munich suffered a 3-1 defeat at Bayer Leverkusen, which sees them slip into third after Mönchengladbach's 2-0 win at Schalke. Jan, no Neuer, Robben or Ribéry at the weekend. Boateng and Martinez are on the bench. Gnabry came on for Müller with 15 minutes ago. Bayern are going through a serious transitional phase. Not the best time for any manager, is it?
No, it's not. No, I mean, you know, there was a lot of unrest earlier on in the season with Niko Kovac and Salihamidžić, and you know, and the hierarchy above Rummenigge as well. You know, it's documented though, as you know, still Bayern Munich need to invest on younger players. You know, they're an aging squad. They're an aging squad, and you know, that's why they're looking at the likes of like Hudson-Odoi and younger players around Europe that they feel that they can get the best out. You know, traditionally Bayern Munich, I've got a good record with young players over the years, and they're going through a transitional period as well. You know, their rivals Dortmund have been phenomenal as well this season, which doesn't help. So, but listen, you can't write them off though. Still, you know, they're still Bayern Munich. They're still the biggest club in Germany, and with the experience they've got, if they start getting the results, then you know they could still challenge Dortmund, and we've seen with Dortmund over the years that they could you know, the wheels can fall off with them at any time. So, still a long way to go.
That's right. And Mark, former Liverpool midfielder Didi Hamann said Lewandowski is becoming a problem for Bayern because he can't defend from the front. Now, it sounds to me like it's a double-edged sword here, mate. He's Bayern's main goal threat, but if he can't press the ball like Kovac wants him, he's contributing to the start of an attack by the opponents. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it really is a double-edged sword, to be fair. You've got, you know what I mean? You either want the goals or you want somebody who's going to run around and press. For me, you know, you've got. If he's still scoring goals, he's doing his job. That's what he's paid for. That's what he's paid to do. And he's still banging the goals in. So he's doing his job.
That's right. And let's talk about Milan, Jan, because Krzysztof Piątek made it 3 goals in his first 2 games for the club. He scored the opening goal in their 1-1 draw at Roma. I think he scored 3 goals in his 3 shots, which is quite an impressive stat. I mean, Milan have really struggled to find someone to put the ball in the back of the net for him. Andre Silva, Higuain and even Balotelli have had opportunities over the years. I think Torres as well, but none of them have passed the test. Is Piątek the man to take Milan that next step forward?
He's a phenomenal player, isn't he, still already? I mean, the little glimpses that I've seen, he was at Genoa. He he had a phenomenal record as well for the size of Genoa. And to go to Milan, as you documented, with all these strikers in the past having problems, the fact that he's hit the ground running, it's a massive step for the lad. I really like him still. You know, he's direct, he's strong, he's quick. He can score goals with both feet. He's the, you know, the next best kind of upcoming striker that I've seen. You know, I've been really impressed with him. But, you know, he'll probably be at Juventus in a few years because, you know, they'll probably snap him up.
Yeah, that's true. They always seem to do that, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So, no, phenomenal start for the lad. And, you know, hopefully it carries on for any Milan fans listening. You know, if you're a Milan fan, it's an exciting time to have a striker like that in your team.
That's right. And I mentioned strikers who were firing blanks at Milan. Morata has made his Atletico Madrid debut at the weekend against Real Betis. They lost. Rod, Diego Costa moved back to Atletico from Chelsea and he's flopped. Shevchenko went back to Milan from Chelsea and he flopped. Weah had a loan spell at Chelsea before joining City. He flopped. I could also add Kesman, Torres, Remy, Demba Ba and Anelka to the list of strikers who flopped since leaving Chelsea. Will Morata be on that list soon or do you think he'll find his feet in La Liga again?
To be honest, I think in his defence, all them players you mentioned, you know, they're coming to the latter stages of the career. All right, a couple of them probably wasn't, but most of them were, and Murata's still young. You know, it's always difficult for a young player to come to the Premiership, a big price tag, a big club like Chelsea, and you know, he didn't hit the ground running, and he's found it a struggle. You know, you'd expect him to go back to La Liga, you know, trying, like I say, hit the ground running and trying to get some confidence up. Because, you know, for any footballer, confidence is a massive thing, especially if you're a forward. You know, you take shots early, you take shots that you probably wouldn't take on if you're not confident. And you just seem to be confident over the ball. And when they're going in, they all seem to be flying in. But, you know, it's on the other hand, if you could be a forward and everything you're hit's not going in and you just need like a deflection or anything, to get you on to get you back on the score sheet and get that run going again. So it's always difficult, but I'd expect him to kick on now. You know, like I say, he's a young player. He's still a Spain international. You know, he's been at some big clubs, and being at his hometown or the club that he's been at as a kid, you'd expect him to settle down now. And like I say, he needs to get a few goals and get that confidence going.
Go
on.
I was going to say, does anyone rate him?
Well, I thought he was decent. He looked decent when he was at Real Madrid before he came to Chelsea. And he's just obviously looked lost at Chelsea, to be honest.
I've never been a fan of Morata, to be honest. I don't see anything amazing about him.
He's a £30-40 million player, but when someone pays 60-odd, 70-odd million, you know, people expect you to score every week.
Yeah, very true.
Mark, are you a Morata fan?
Not really, to be fair. I agree with Rod. He's a decent player, but I think the price tag's put a different amount of pressure on him, and he hasn't been able to handle it. With him being a young player, going back home, going back to like his local club, maybe he'll settle down, and he's still got a long time in his career to produce again.
Yeah, I don't think his goal scoring stats are pretty good. To be fair, he got 10 goals in 37 games for Real Madrid in 4 years. He scored 15 in 63 at Juventus, and that's in 2 years. He went back to Real Madrid, scored 15 in 26, which ain't bad, to be fair, but 16 in 47 at Chelsea isn't great. And I don't know, lads, do you think it's make or break for him now? Because, you know, he's at a club where, let's be honest, they're not a very attack-minded side, but they still create chances to Atletico Madrid. They've got great players in, you know, Saul and obviously Griezmann. Do you think this could actually determine the rest of his career? Because we've seen him miss a lot of sitters, which aren't going to be great for his confidence. But at the same time, if he's at a club at Atletico Madrid where they're going to be getting chances, he's got to be putting them away, surely.
I think this will be the last big club for him if he doesn't produce.
Yeah, I agree with Mark.
Yeah, Mark, took words right out of my mouth. I agree.
Well, he'll probably end up...
I think he's been to too many big clubs now still for him not to consistently produce. I mean, the only stat I'll give him a little bit of slack for, the first spell at Real Madrid, he was on the bench a lot. And he was coming off the bench to try and influence games. But after that, I think everywhere he's gone, at Juventus, he was the main man there. at Chelsea, you know, was supposed to be the main man, and he hasn't worked out. And also for his Spanish career as well, if he wants to get back into the Spain team, then he needs to do it consistently. I don't personally think Atletico Madrid is the right club for him. I think what you said, I agree, that they're a very defensive-minded side. I mean, all right, you can use Morata's expertise to play on the counter-attack, but they don't create a lot of chances, Atletico. They're one of them sides that will win 1-0 or 1-1 or, you know, so... for me personally, yeah, Atletico Madrid was the team that he started, but for me, I don't think it was the right move to go back there.
I guess time will tell.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, we've seen a lot of Spanish players come through over the years, and, you know, someone like Iago Aspas is, you know, went back to Celta, you know, from Liverpool, and he was banging in the goals. He's done pretty well since going back to La Liga. So perhaps, you know, Morata is back in his comfort zone. I mean, you mentioned Real Madrid earlier. I mean, let's be honest, how many strikers have thrived at Real Madrid since Ronaldo has been there? You know, I mean, I think only Benzema was really getting in on the act, but any other strikers can you think of? I can't think of any. So I think it was kind of unfortunate to be at Real Madrid at the time that Ronaldo was there. But at the same time, you know, if you want to be the best, you've got to, you know, overcome the best and beat the best. And he obviously didn't do that. And at Juventus, we didn't see much of him. And at Chelsea, we saw the worst side of Alvaro Morata. So, yeah, I agree. This would probably be his last big move. But let's see. As Mark said, time will tell. Jan, do you want to talk a little bit about A-League? Because we spoke about it the other day, and you mentioned a pretty strange game that occurred.
Yeah, it was Adelaide played Brisbane Roar. Brisbane Roar kind of struggling a little bit in the league this season. Adelaide haven't been great. And Brisbane Roar were 2-0 up. Adelaide had the man sent off after like 7 minutes with the VAR, which I thought was an absolute appalling decision. Then Brisbane Roar made it 3-0 away from home. They managed to pull a goal back, Adelaide, from a free kick on the stroke of half-time. So it went to 3-1. Second half started. Brisbane Roar had the man sent off. Then Brisbane Roar had their goalkeeper sent off. So all of a sudden, you've gone from 3-0 up with 11 against 10 to being 3-1 with 9 men against 10. And guess what? Adelaide won 4-3 in the 97th minute.
Pinball football.
Oh, mate, it was exciting. I mean, you know, as, you know, through watching it, you kind of wanted Adelaide to score just because they were 3-0 down with 10 men. So when he went in, I must admit, I did cheer.
And Mark, have you coached any strange games in USL like that?
We played Reno. We were like, we went 4-1 up. And they ended up coming back 4-3, and their goalkeeper came up for a corner in the last, well, it was like the 92nd minute or something, and Bicycle kicked it off the crossbar, came back out, and then the defender volleyed it off the post. It rolled across the line and went out. So we managed to hold on, but we were lucky.
I blame the manager.
Shocking decisions, mate.
But Mark, when you see a goalkeeper go, I always wanted to know this. When you see a goalkeeper going up for a corner when you're winning, what's going on in your mind? Are you thinking, do I stick a man on him? Do I just put a guy on the halfway line and just hope that we hoof it long to? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question, mate. It's a good question. No, I think you just have to, you know, just have to adapt, and we always have a spare man and just have him attack the ball.
That simple.
Yeah, just have him attack the ball, and then you've just got, you know, just the basics. You can't really, it doesn't really change anything. You just got to attack the ball and pick up the pieces around that second ball.
Can you be brave though, Mark, and stick two men up on the halfway line and say to them, go on then, because if we get the ball, we break, we score.
You can be. Mm. We've done it at the start of the season, but never when the goalkeeper's been up.
Alright, I'll tell you what,
that is a bit ballsy.
I said, tell you what, a question has just come to mind, going back to the whole Morata thing, right? Have you ever brought in a player that hasn't settled, and you thought, right, I need to give this guy a chance, but how many chances do you give him before you think, right, they're not good enough for us?
Yeah, we had a boy from Cameroon who was had all the potential to do well, but you kept putting him in games and it just wasn't happening. Give him a start, still, you know, still doesn't really affect the game or doesn't do what you want of him. So they get to a point where, like Morata, like we're saying, like you only get so many chances and then you look to get somebody else. No matter where you're from or what you do, you get to a point where a coach has to decide, yeah, it's not he's not doing it for the team. If he doesn't figure it out, then, you know, there's plenty of players that you can go and get who are going to figure it out.
So do you think he weren't able to settle because he was from Cameroon and because of the surroundings, or was it just the, I don't know, the style of play or whatever didn't wasn't suited to his ability?
He actually struggled with the adapting to the American lifestyle, adapting to the food. He was missing food from home. So we managed to find like a local restaurant in town that would start making him food, try and make him feel a little more at home. I honestly don't think he was mentally ready and up to adapting. I think where he came from, he was the main man. He was the, you know, he was the best player. And then he came in here and he struggled with players who were better than him or the same level as him, and he struggled to adapt.
Fair enough. Right, gents, shall we wrap up the show with our quiz?
You can do so. Just before you do it,
yep.
Just for the listeners, yep. West Ham has finished 1-1 with Liverpool. Dario Origi has just missed an absolute sitter in the last kick of the game.
Well, he's offside as well.
And he's offside as well. So, you know, for the viewers to watch this maybe later, what a sitter this was. But yeah, like Rod said,
did the linesman put his flag up?
No, it was clear.
No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't. Oh, okay.
And he didn't as well.
Surprise, surprise. Surprise, surprise. Okay. Well, no. I think the less said about that, the better, because the first goal was offside, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Offside? More like 3 yards offside, but anyway.
Okay, well, so City could go top on Wednesday if it beat Everton.
Yes, on goal difference, I think. Yeah.
Don't let it slip, lads. No. Jesus, it's going to come back to bite me on the arse. Anyway, right, our quiz. It is the Guess Who game. So basically, I thought of a current Premier League player, and you guys need to guess who he is based on the clues that I'll give you, which happen to be his former and or current teammates. Rod is currently in the lead out of you three because he's got one right in the past. Jan is still on 0 points. And Mark, I think...
How many's Jan got?
He's on zero, mate.
Alright, okay.
He's on zero. Right, okay. I've just jotted these names down because I didn't do one earlier. So I'm going to give you the first three clues. The first three clues are Richard Dunn, Scott Carson and Chris Wood.
Carson, Chris Wood, and who?
And Richard Dunn.
Richard Dunn. And it's a current Premier League player.
That's correct, yep. Yeah. I'm playing Guess Who Bingo with you guys because usually it's like, it could be anyone!
Seamus Coleman.
That's your guess, yeah?
Oh, by the way you said it, I'm wrong. But yeah, that's my guess.
Okay, you're wrong.
Current Premier League player.
That's round one. Jan's already guessed. Anyone want to guess? Mark, Rod?
No, mate, I'm struggling with that.
Shane Long.
Shane Long is wrong.
Shane Long is wrong.
It's wrong on many for many reasons.
Mate, I'm going to pass on
that. Pass. All right, fair enough. Okay. Second round of clues. I'm going to give you four this time. I'm going to give you Brad Friedel. I'm going to give you Matthew Upson, Anthony Clockhart, and Nick Powell.
Michael Brighton.
He's got it!
Oh my god.
Where's that come from, yeah?
Do you know what? I'm actually dancing in the living room.
Oh my
wow.
God.
Wow, my voice went up a few octaves. Bloody hell.
I just never got that.
Go on, Jan. How did you get it?
Mark Albright and Nokera at Leicester. That's the one that I saw.
Oh, wow.
Nokera played for Leicester and Brighton, didn't he?
That's... Well, no, he played...
So that's... Yeah. Huh?
No, Albright wasn't at Brighton.
No, but no. Albright played with Nokera at Leicester.
That's right.
That's where I got it.
Yeah, so Anthony Knockhart started at Villa. He went on loan to Wigan. And then he ended up at Leicester City. Do you want the rest of the clues, just so you know? I was going to say Downing, Real Coca, Heskey, Delph and Milner, which are at Villa. I was going to say James MacArthur at Wigan. And that was it for the Leicester one, because I said Upson Wood and Knockharts. There you go. I finally got it out. So there you go. Well done, Jan.
Still, you know I'm not one for gloating, yeah? Am I the quickest ever to get it? Like this quick?
Well, I don't know. Ask your missus. Are you the quickest ever?
Do you know what? We won't even go there.
Yeah, it's not that kind of show anymore. No, I think you are up there. I think you are up there, but then again, we've been doing this quiz for about 6 years. So,
Has Rod ever got it this quick?
Yeah, Nathan Ake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't that quick. It wasn't after the second round.
Yeah, second round.
All right, I'm
going to have to go back and check it out.
yeah, let's go back. I want VAR.
Yeah, go back, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, Jan, you know what this means?
Oh, no. Does that mean I've got to do it next week?
You have to do it next week.
Oh, great. All right.
Superb. Well, that was fun. That was fun while it lasted. There you go. Quickest.
Now, listen, Liverpool didn't win and I got the quiz right. I'm going to bed very happy tonight.
You're buzzing, Jan. You're buzzing.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. Right, that's it for our show this week. Guys, Twitter handles, Jan.
Yannickus J.
Rod.
Rod James Giggs.
Mark.
Mark Briggs 6.
And you are quite active on Twitter now. Very good, very good.
A little bit more.
You're doing well. You're doing well, mate.
And on Facebook.
Say it again, mate.
Oh, Jan, just shut up. Honestly. If you're going to talk, just say something. For Christ's sake, it just disappears.
Listen, just because I got the quiz right, there's no need to treat me like that.
Oh, once out of 25. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Right, that's it for us this week. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Fence. We have a Facebook group page, and that's about it. Until next time, guys.